From meager beginnings as an adolescent ambulance washer in Moose Jaw, Saskatchewan, to a decade-long legacy of bringing you breaking news before it makes the news, broadcasting live from the studios of Scared Monkeys Radio Network via C-band satellite W3-957, Access Communications Channel 7, and worldwide via digital streaming audio at ScaredMonkeysRadio.com, it's the Dana Pretzer Show. And now, your host, Dana Pretzer.
And good evening, everyone. We've got a big show ahead of us tonight. Have you been wondering about what's been going on with the disappearance of Stacy Peterson? The suspicious death of Kathleen Savio. Drew Peterson, the former Bolingbrook police sergeant, he's been in the press quite a bit lately. Of course, we've had his attorney, Joel Brodsky, on the program many times here on Scared Monkeys Radio. Well, I thought what I would do is sit down with Drew Peterson and have a conversation with him. Now, there's not a lawyer that's worth his salt that would let his client come on any type of program, my program or any other program, and start being interrogated, start saying something that may incriminate him. But what they'll do is they'll let their clients come on programs and talk. And that's what we're going to do here in just a minute. I'm going to sit down with Drew Peterson, former Bolingbrook police sergeant, and talk about what's been going on in his life. Now, I'm going to take a little bit of heat for this interview, but I think it's important that you listen very closely to the interview because there's important things that are said. Then a little bit later on, we have three gals from a new blog called Women in Crime, Inc. Okay, it's www.womenincrimeinc.blogspot.com. We've got Vanessa Leggett. She's written for Newsweek, Texas Monthly, and the Houston Chronicle. We have Robin Sachs. Of course, she's a prosecutor in Los Angeles County that handles sex crimes against children. And, of course, the criminal profiler, Pat Brown. We're going to be joining them a little bit later on this evening to talk about the new blog that they're working on called Women in Crime, Inc. And then after that, one of the Scared Monkeys, Lisa, will be here to talk about the recent travel show in St. Louis where attendees were educated about Aruba. So we're going to sit down right now, and I'm going to play a recording that I made with Drew Peterson a little bit earlier on and see what you think. Here's Drew Peterson, former Bolingbrook police sergeant, and me having a conversation. I've hosted this talk show now for 11 years, and I've also been a cop for 25 years, 3 months, 6 days, 14 minutes. I'm not counting. But a story that I've found fascinating on the news, in the internet, I've interviewed Joel Brodsky a few times about this, is the Drew Peterson story. If you happen to catch an episode of On the Record with Greta Van Susteren, in fact, 2 episodes, you'll have seen a bit of work that she did. I called it The Day in the Life of Drew Peterson. I think maybe that's what they called it, too. And it was nice to see that. It was nice to get away from the speculation and the innuendo and look at the guy that's trying to survive. He's taking his kids to the grocery store. He's doing whatever. So what I thought I'd do tonight is invite Drew Peterson and Joel Brodsky onto the program and shoot the breeze with them, kind of cop to cop tonight. So welcome, Drew. How are you?
I'm fine.
Nice to have you on the program. Joel, I want to ask you a quick question just before we get going here.
Sure.
There's some news that has come out here about Drew's sons, the grand jury, and a subpoena. Can you just fill us in? I realize you can't say too much, but just give us an update as far as what's going on there.
Drew's hired a lawyer to represent his boys, which, is obviously their right. And he's concerned that the boys had testified once before at a child advocacy center with the police and the state's attorney present. And before they testified a second time, he wanted to get their prior statement and have them review it before they testify a second, so they don't fall into what's called the perjury trap. And the state's resisting that, so they've set the hearings before the judge on this issue, and it's probably going to delay things at least a month and a half until they straighten that one issue out.
Well, that's good. It's fair that the boys get proper representation, but I'm not here tonight to talk about specific facts. I'm here tonight to have a conversation with Drew Peterson. And Drew, welcome to the program. One of the mottos, one of the things I learned very early in life, I grew up with a father as a policeman. I know you have a son who's a police officer. I've been a police officer now myself for too damn long, to be quite honest with you. But what you learn really early on in life is that you treat people the way you expect to be treated by others. You were a cop for 29 years. You've seen it all. You've been like the old Johnny Cash song, in the mud and the blood and the beer, I'm sure. This has got to be an experience right now that you never expected to ever have in your life, the circus that's surrounding you right now.
Well, I've actually been a policeman 32 years. I spent 2 years in Washington, D.C., and I came up just short about 10 working days for the 30th year. So I've been a policeman 32 years without a doubt. And this type of thing, when you try to live an honorable life and do everything like you're supposed to on the job, and all of a sudden they have this storm coming up like it has, it's very disheartening, very scary to be on the opposite end of things. Everybody's looking at you like a bad guy. The media likes to keep me sinister, and I think that sells better for the media, keep me sinister. You rarely see anything positive coming out about me, but I must have done something right for the last 32 years to maintain a job as a policeman and be promoted to make a sergeant and actually be a watch commander on many occasions for the last 10 years.
You know, the whole fact of being a cop, you're under that scrutiny anyway. Cops don't have friends. They have other cops who are friends. You go through life as a, as kind of the bad guy, the people that look at you as soon as you walk into a room, the whisper under your breath, and God forbid if you happen to pick up a relative or a friend of somebody you know for a shoplifting beef or a drunk driving charge or whatever, you're always under that scrutiny, Drew. But now all of a sudden, this is big time. This is the craziest thing that I've seen in all my years of experience. And we've had everyone from psychics to people come out with just speculation to plain and simple nuts, in my opinion, selling their story to whatever. This has to be, I know you've talked about stress, but this has to be something that's it wears on you. And seeing you the other night on Fox News, I'm not sure how you're staying so sane.
Well, the first, couple weeks was the worst. I mean, I lost about 30 pounds in the first couple of days, actually. I was so stressful, but I really didn't know what was happening, and I didn't really know what to expect. And I've had a little bit of time to settle down and think about it in detail. And I remember the first couple of days just sneaking out to meet attorneys and stuff. I had to jump over the back fence and to hide from the media that was barraging my home for pretty much for the first 8 weeks of this entire thing, nonstop. They'd get there at 4 in the morning and they'd leave at 11 at night, sometimes 12. So basically I was hiding out from them. And like to get anywhere, we had to jump over the back fence, or I had to hand kids over the back fence. My two 13 and 15-year-old sons had to climb the fence to just go to school. So that was pretty stressful. And they really had no thoughts or feelings about the well-being of my family when they were doing their thing.
Now this,
I wanted to get their story.
And you know this, you're a cop a long time, you're a smart guy, you know that this will either come to a head or something will happen someday, and I don't want to again get into specific facts, but you've got four kids. You must have to sit down and meet with maybe the older ones now and then too to see how they feel, or to talk to them about their coping, because it's got to be wearing on them somewhat too.
Well, actually I got six kids, two older boys. I have three sets of two. The little ones, we just keep kind of active and play with them, tea parties with Lacey, that type of thing. But the middle two, the 13 and 15-year-olds, I think they're the toughest. I mean, Tommy, he's probably one of the brightest kids I've ever known. Out of a graduating class of 1,299 kids, he's number one in his class. And he's playing as a freshman in the senior level bands. He's in like four different bands. So he has a nice circle of friends that kind of insulate him from all this. And Chris is a wrestler, and he's also in Honors Everything, and along with Tom, and we've had a couple heart-to-hearts as possibilities and contingencies, and if this happens, do this, and if this happens, do that.
Exactly.
But most of all, I basically tell him, just hang tough. No matter what happens, hang tough, and if this happens, do this, if this happens, do that. So we've actually had to set up a bunch of contingencies for anything.
One of the criticisms that have come forward, Drew, about you is your personality, and your attorney and I have talked about that in interviews that he and I have done in the past about, you know, being a cop, you have to shut off your human side, and you know, if you drive by a crime scene or a traffic accident and you see a couple of officers standing out there and they're maybe smiling or joking, they're not necessarily laughing at the crime scene or the accident. That's just an escape mechanism for them. It's a way to, you know, your personality changes real fast. You can't be human when you're a police officer. What I mean by that is by showing emotions. You show up at a crime scene and you start crying, even though you want to, you're not going to last long in police work. When you look at your personality, an outgoing guy, a guy who's challenged the media, for lack of a better term, the Drew Peterson that we see on camera, is that the real Drew Peterson, or is that the Drew Peterson when he was wearing a uniform and a badge?
Actually, I've been pretty reserved. Mr. Brodsky's toned me down quite a bit. It's just like I've actually had a departmental policy written against practical jokes at the department. You know, things I used to do with the practical jokes I used to fling at people. And I've always dealt, like I say, as a policeman, you deal with humor and scary things, or you deal with scary things through humor. And basically that's a defense mechanism all policemen develop early on. So what you're seeing is basically a lightning version of, I think, what I'm capable of. So there's no book written anywhere on how you should act.
Now, I'm not sure, Joel and Drew, and maybe I'll ask Joel this question, if you're able to see all the media coverage or to cover all, hear all the stories, the newspapers, whatever. There's been some pretty vile things written about your client, Joel, and you have been attacked yourself many times on many different talk shows for doing your job representing your client. I want to get you first, Joel, to comment about the media, and then we'll get Drew's response.
The media. What a learning experience I've had dealing with the mainstream and even the Fox, which I could consider a little bit off mainstream media. They're so competitive and so concerned about ratings and getting being first that the story, so to speak, or the suffers at that expense. You know, their ideas, they want to get something that's going to draw listeners or readers or viewers. That's their first, and then getting, you know, to the meat of it is second. And I just don't think that there's any medium out there, short of some, you know, really very serious newspapers that can devote the time or the space that's necessary to get into such a complex case like this. I mean, you, Dana, have done, given us, you know, this amount of time to talk about one single issue, and we're gonna get fairly deep into it. But I mean, this is a very complex case, and I just don't know that there's any way to really that the modern media can really, you know, delve into this to the extent it's required in this very type of complex and very serious matter.
You know, Drew, I want to get you to comment on that in a second, but you've been, you've opened your door, your home, and a lot of people wouldn't do that. You've shown your private life to the media, and I think you've been tricked, and that's my words, not yours, by the media in some cases, and then, you know, stabbed right in the back right after it. Again, ladies and gentlemen, we're not here to talk about guilt or innocence. We're here to talk, Drew Peterson and I, man to man, cop to cop, however you want to say it. Drew, your thoughts on the media?
Well, through listening to the media, in most cases, I haven't heard anybody get it 100% right yet. It's like you get guys like Geraldo coming in the house, and they'll ask you one thing, and they'll say, well, tell me in your own words. And I'll respond to them about a question, and they'll say, well, say it like this instead. I go, well, then it won't be in my own words. Well, it sounds better. It sells better. And so it's like my interview with authority such as him just led me to believe, you know, they're not here for the truth. They're here for sensationalism. And that's what they're looking for. So in most cases, in a lot of these shows, I have to sit back and just bite my tongue watching some of it, that their stories and the truth of everything is so far off that it's just hilarious. I just can't even comment on it.
If you're just tuning in, Attorney Joel Brodsky and former Bolingbrook, Illinois Police Sergeant Drew Peterson are joining me to talk. That's what we're doing here. Drew, you know, you're a policeman a long time, that when you conduct an investigation, it's like having a puzzle in a box. You've got all the pieces, and you sit down and you put together the pieces. This is no shock to you. You know that the Illinois State Police are going to do certain things and interview certain people, and I'm sure you've given the statements, and I don't want to hear about your statements, but I'm sure you've spoken to people about this. But when you have media people say, I want to know what you did, etc., I want to know where you were, etc., and expect legitimately to get an answer from you, how ridiculous is that?
When they expect to get an answer from me?
Yeah, to for you to basically come forward and say things to them that your attorney doesn't want you to say.
Right, well, a lot of times, you know, I've been cooperating with the public officials and law enforcement as much as I can, but when you get, you know, your attorneys involved, right away they're telling you, don't say anything, let them find out their own information. It's not your job to provide them with information that's going to hurt you. So, basically, since Mr. Brodsky came to see me, I've just been keeping quiet to them.
You know, you mentioned a good point with Geraldo. Can you imagine as a police officer sitting down to take a statement from someone and they tell you what they want to tell you and you say, no, say it this way. how far that would go? Like, that would get thrown out so fast you wouldn't know what to do.
Well, this has come up for somebody who's out there presenting information as the truth, and it's not the truth. It's not what's happened. And then he went next door and gave a further interview with the neighbors, and it was like, made it sound like I was ready to take hostages and start lining people up and hurting them. You know, it's like, and it was just kind of impossible to deal with. But again, it was dealing with trying to make it sensational rather than truthful.
Yeah, we've, if I can interject.
Sure.
Drew and I have kind of gone through a learning curve with the media. We started out almost trusting everybody, and just kind of believing that everybody was acting in good faith. And now we've learned that that isn't the case. It took a little bit of time, and we had to get bit a few times, but we finally figured it out.
Well, it's crazy to see a good story like you see on the record where they actually followed Drew around the cameras. If that had been me, I wouldn't let them do that, but good for Drew. To, after people sitting back and analyzing, how come he had so many jugs of milk in his grocery cart? No, it's just crazy. It's just absolutely flipping crazy for that.
Well, instead of saying, you know, here the man's providing and makes sure there's food in the house for his children, it's just like I have too much milk.
Yeah, I did, right.
Or I had diapers in the thing, and my baby's 3 years old. Well, I put diapers under the night to prevent accidents.
Oh, well, good grief. You know, I tell them I'm using them to polish my car. Like, what business is it of yours? But, you know, when you see the stories in the media today, I looked at a story about a mother who took her child to the car wash and turned the high-pressure washer on her 3-year-old. And then there's another story about a dad who puts his kid in the dryer on the heat cycle for a little while because he mouthed off to him. But yet, we're analyzing Drew Peterson because he bought too many jugs of milk. This is nuts. Drew, I'm just going to keep you for a few more minutes, and again, I really appreciate you coming on. Do you miss being a policeman? Is it something that you ever get out of your blood?
Well, you know, you see things happening when I'm driving around now. I'm a civilian now. When you drive around, you see things happening. Your first tendency is to call it in or do something about it, but it's just like it's kind of hard now to sit back on my hands. And I don't think I'd get a response anyway. I've had a couple instances at the house where the Bolingbrook police have refused to respond to my home.
Wow.
Because of who I am and what's going on. So
I was just going to ask that question, and I wasn't sure if you were going to if you could respond or if you wanted to respond about that. About the you're still in a community, you're still in a home, you've been the focus of so much media attention, worldwide attention, that if you called a cop, would one come to you? And I guess you've answered that question. How disappointing is that for you?
Well, here's a group of people who I would have taken a bullet for. And when you go into law enforcement, you know as well as I do that you have that mindset that, would you take a bullet for these people? My answer was always yes. When I hear the same people I would have taken a bullet for who were totally ignoring me, I guess there's an order that none of my prior associates or fellow policemen can talk to me.
Yeah.
If they do have contact with me, I guess they have to do a report to the state police as to the context of that meeting. So I've been totally cut off from the whole law enforcement community in the village of Bolingbrook.
There's been several reports, and Joel and I spoke about it last time he's on my program, that courts have ordered that your property be returned to you. Have you received any of that property back?
We got a couple of iPods back and a couple of CDs, and that's really everything we've gotten back so far.
There's still a few.
Basically, I wanted one of my cars back. There was two of them they took. I wanted one of them, but we're getting them both back. But I'm spending anywhere from $1,000 to $1,600 a month, which cuts into a budget, to pay for something I already have. So,
there's still a few hoops that we have to jump through to get them back, but we should have them back very shortly after the 17th.
One last question, and I'll ask this to both of you, and again, whether you can respond or not, I'll let you decide. I see your story. I followed it closely. I've reported on it myself many times, and I've seen the shady side of so-called witnesses come forward and sell their stories to the National Enquirers to be put on network television to basically gossip, for lack of a better term. Joel, if this goes to court, I'm sure you are preparing the best you can for that. But you have to wonder about this case and how it's been tried in the media as far as the strategy for you.
Yeah, I mean, this case, to find an impartial jury in this case may very well be impossible. It's been well overplayed to the negative. I mean, if there was a lot of media attention and there was a lot of attention, but it was fair attention and giving both sides and analyzing things, you know, factually, that would be one thing. But it seems as if there's been a lynch mob. I've said this a couple of times, that if we were in, you know, Oklahoma in 1850, you know, there'd be a lynch mob out there, Drew. Which is not, I don't think that's a society, type of society we'd want to live in. And it's disturbing, this lynch mob mentality, that people feel in their gut that something is a fact, and therefore they're going to act on it. I mean, we had in Illinois, any event, in Illinois, we've had 13 people who are on death row, 13 juries who felt to a moral certitude that the person was so guilty they should be sentenced to death. And then later on, all these people were exonerated, were found to be not guilty. So I think that's got to give us pause, and we have to realize that what we feel and what we believe isn't always correct, and that we have to keep an open mind and look strictly at the evidence. And I'm afraid that we've lost that in Drew's case, and I hope that we can regain it. I'll let Drew give the final word. No, Drew? Drew?
All I can say is innocent until proven guilty, and everybody that's involved in this thing has turned a blind eye to that saying. You know, particularly my old chief of police. It's just like the man come out publicly on many occasions and publicly say what a bad guy I am and what a disgrace I am to the department, and did all he could to prevent me from receiving my pension. So it's just like, he's the person put in this position, but he turns a blind eye to the Constitution. So what do you do with that?
you know,
how can you deal with that?
Yeah, it has to be difficult. And I know I've said this one last question before, but one last question, I promise this time. What's next, Drew? I know it's probably day to day, maybe minute to minute for you, but what's next for you?
Basically, just raise my kids. I've gone from being a watch commander, where I run as many as 25 guys on a shift, to being a mother of four. So I'm here to say the mother of four jets far harder than the watch commander jet.
Yeah.
So, like I said earlier in the Greta show, I have a newfound respect for the homemakers and moms of America, because I tell you, it's a tough, relentless, very non-rewarding job, but you get the reward from the look in your kids when you're raising them right and they're doing what they should be doing. And they have gallons of milk in the refrigerator to keep up.
Yeah, exactly. And the analysis was about the milk and how clean your house was. And hell, I thought you did a great job. Anyway, Drew Peterson, Joel Brodsky, thank you.
Thank you, Dan.
Thanks for having us.
Okay, take care. Bye-bye.
Bye, guys.
All right, now, I'm going to take some flack for this interview. I know that. But there isn't an attorney on earth that would allow his client to come on my show or any other show to be interrogated at this time. Okay? And when I wanted to sit down and talk to Drew Peterson, it was to have a conversation with Drew Peterson. We all have our thoughts. We all have our opinions as far as guilt or innocence, and I have mine. In fact, I've shared them. I'd like to see Drew Peterson take a polygraph test. His attorney probably won't let him. But I would also like to see the Illinois State Police conduct a proper investigation into the disappearance of Stacy Peterson. Stacy Peterson deserves closure and answers. So does Kathleen Savio. Stacy Peterson went missing on Sunday, October 28, 2007. She was officially reported missing in the early hours of Monday, October 29, 2007, after her sister, Cassandra Kales, failed to hear from her when expected. Drew Peterson claims that Stacy called him at 9 p.m. on Sunday to tell him that she had left him for another man and that she had left her car at Bolingbrook International Airport. The last recorded words from Stacy Peterson were on a voicemail on her father's answering machine on October 17th at 12:37 p.m., 11 days before she disappeared. The message said, "Hey, Dad, it's me, Stacy. I just wanted to call and tell you I love you." Stacy Peterson's answers should come forward to her family. Answers about her disappearance should be there. If Stacy Peterson is out there, she should come forward. Kathleen Savio's family and Stacy Peterson's family and Drew Peterson all deserve proper answers, proper jurisprudence, and this investigation needs to go on and go forward. The media needs to stop speculating, reporting rumors, and those that are potential witnesses, stop selling your story to the National Enquirer or any other organization, and tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth. I'll be right back.
And now, more of the Dana Pretzer Show on Scared Monkeys Radio. Here's Dana.
Okay, we're back. We're all bloggers. Anyone that spends time on the internet is a blogger. And there's a new blog out now called Women in Crime, Inc. And, of course, there's a link to it on our webpage. But if you want, jot this down now, www.womenincrimeinc.blogspot.com. I'm going to read you a little intro about what it's about. Profiling the nation's most intriguing criminals, interviewing killers, survivors, witnesses, and lawyers, arresting suspects, prosecuting and locking up serial and sexual killers, safeguarding civil liberties, and ensuring government accountability, recreating faces on skulls to help identify victims and solve cases, witnessing executions on Texas death row, covering the nation's top crime stories, and uncovering truth in the face of jail time and death threats. This is the type of stuff that you'll see in Women in Crime, Inc. Tonight we have Vanessa Leggett. She has written for Newsweek, Texas Monthly, the Houston Chronicle, and the Justice Department. happened to jail her for protecting a source on a murder case. Robin Sachs, of course, regular listeners to this program will know, as a prosecutor from Los Angeles, where she handles sex crimes against children. She's also an author, legal analyst, appearing on Larry King and Fox News, and of course a part of the Kids Scene Investigator and a DA member of the treatment team at UCLA, and recently named as the national spokesperson for National Amber Stick. And we're going to talk to her about that in a little bit. And Pat Brown is here, and she's of course, a regular guest on my program and known nationally as a criminal profiler, 24/7 news fixture with countless appearances on CNN's Nancy Grace, Larry King, and some of the morning shows, Dr. Phil, Discovery Channel, Court TV, and I hear Pat will also be doing a cooking show soon. No, I'm just kidding. Of course, she's the author of the book Killing for Sport. She'll be cooking me, I think, if I don't smarten up. Welcome, ladies, to the program, and this Women in Crime, Inc. sounds really exciting. I want to start with you, Vanessa. You're kind of one of the people that's behind this. Tell us about you, and tell us about how Women in Crime, Inc. got started.
Well, actually, about five. There's 15 contributors.
Right.
For this blog, and a third of us were writing at another crime blog, and we got the idea that maybe it was kind of neat to have a blog with all women criminal justice professionals and authors, sort of to distinguish us from the countless crime blogs that are out there on the internet. And we sort of pulled our resources together and started networking and talking to other women and trying to assemble, you know, a broad array of representatives from really all media. We've got, you know, people in television, nationally, locally, movie. We've got a couple of prosecutors. Robin is one of them on the phone on the show now. We've got a defense attorney who's probably the best female defense attorney in Texas and one of the best in the nation. So we've got this great assortment of women that we were able to pull together, and I think that's what makes us stand out.
Yeah, some of the names, and I was remiss by not sharing them. Donna Weaver, she's a PI whose career began with her husband's disappearance and murder. Catherine Scardino is a defense attorney who you just talked about. Robin Sachs, Donna Pendergrass is a prosecutor who put away the most prolific serial killer in U.S. history. Michelle McPhee, Vanessa Leggett I don't know. I can't keep track whoever everybody that's here is you. Jenna Jackson is a producer for 48 Hours, Diane Fanning, Stacey Dietrichs, Tina Derman, Catherine Casey, Andrea Campbell, and of course Pat Brown. There's a lot of gals there. And something that it looks like you're planning on doing, Vanessa, is not that the girls can't do a great job, but every so often you're going to throw in a little information from a guy too, aren't you?
Yeah, we thought that would only be fair. It's sort of our playmate of the month, if you will. No, I'm kidding. We are inviting male contributors, men who are in the crime business in some regard, whether or not they're attorneys or journalists or authors, whatever the case may be, men with interesting backgrounds who most of the people out there looking at blogs would know, and we're inviting them to write blogs for Women in Crime, Inc. And the week that they blog, we will give what's called a clue box on our website with clues to who the person is, so readers can kind of guess, you know, who the next blogger is going to be that's a man. So we've got that, and we also are inviting guest contributors from other segments as well. In fact, if you would like to write for Women in Crime, Inc., we're inviting you to do so. We've got one feature called Your Turn, and if you've got something on your mind, case in the news or whatever, there are submission suggestions on our website, and we invite you to write in, and we might give you some ink. We also have a few other columns. One of them is called Case Files, where we're inviting men, detectives and such, to share, and PIs, to share, you know, their most interesting cases. And what else am I missing here? Pat, Robin, help me out. There's another column. I can't think of the name of it. Case Files, Survivor Stories. We're also inviting survivors. Go ahead and take over, Pat.
Oh, I just wanted. I just
yeah.
I don't know that I can take over there because your memory is better than mine. But I do want to add something about our male contributors. When we started to have a great female blog in there, and we're excited about the fact that women, sometimes we don't even meet the women in our own business because there's so many men out there.
Exactly.
who we associate with on a daily basis. We once in a while we meet a woman and go, oh my God, you're in the business too. How wonderful, we get a chance to talk. So this is a great camaraderie for us. But at the same time, we don't want to lose out on our male fellow workers out there. So we know somebody who's great, and we want to hear from them. So we said, hey, we've got to have a way to have our male contributors be able to contribute as well, because we don't want to leave them out totally, because we would be remiss if we did that. So that's one reason we have the guest male bloggers, because that way we can include them as well.
Pat, as a criminal profiler and one who covers a lot of the high profile cases on television and other places, there seems to be a nonstop, sadly, supply of stories. Every story that's out there you can talk about, and it'll be a unique perspective to see so many different personalities and so many different levels of expertise on your blog with all the gals there, and again the odd guy that drops around. I'm curious, from your perspective, with the internet as strong as it is, and the blogosphere as strong as it is, and of course that's why we call this Scared Monkeys Radio, how popular do you see this? How much time will you guys, because you're all busy, be able to spend at Women in Crime, Inc.?
Well, I think it's going to be very successful. We have such a great group of people. I think we're really going to have wonderful people coming to the blog to share with us. I think I just think it's going to be marvelous. And as far as because we have such great people, it's inspiring for us to actually write there. Because sometimes you can work on a blog and you can write and say, well, you know, I do it, I get it over with, it's done. You know, I've done my part. But this, we have so much to share with each other. Like you say, everybody's coming from so many different walks of the field that, as a profiler, I'm excited to hear what the defense attorney has to say.
Right.
I'm excited to hear what the prosecutor has to say, what the forensics person has to say. And so when I write something and they all respond, I'm getting great feedback, and then I can read theirs, and then the same thing happens. I'm learning from them, they're learning from me, and we're learning from the people that are coming there. And the better the quality of the group, it's kind of like if you're going out to play a game of tennis, and you play against somebody who's not very good, your skills just go down the drain. You play a horrible game of tennis. But if you play against a great tennis player, for some reason you get better. So I think that's what this is going to be. I think we're all going to really inspire each other, and it's going to be a fabulous blog.
Speaking of good tennis players, Robin Sachs, prosecutor from Los Angeles, a little different when you're blogging than a five-minute soundbite on cable news. We try to avoid that on this program where, you know, we just sit and we chat. Where on television, you're limited to 2 or 3 minute segments. On the blog, you're going to be able to, you know, spill your guts, for lack of a better term.
That's true. First of all, one thing that so often happens is that you only get a, you know, 3 or 4 sentences out if you're lucky on a television show, and obviously on this radio show you're able to speak your mind. But even further than that, you're able to really get into a story and get into some of the nuances and niches of some of the cases that are going on out there and get input on a national level, where so often we are listening to just whatever aspects of the case that are coming up within, you know, a small local community. And along the lines of what Pat was saying in response to your previous question, the one nice thing with having the group that we have is we have a nice number of groups, so not any, the duty of writing doesn't become a burden. It is truly a pleasure, because we don't have to do it every single day. Everybody takes on a different day from the women's point of view during the week, and by doing that, we have the whole month to create our stories, look at everyone else's stories, add something that's different instead of just coming up with something to fill computer space.
Absolutely. Vanessa Leggett, you spent time in jail for protecting a source. You've instructed writing in criminology. This is going to be something where John Q. Public goes to. He's going to want to be able to sit down and read about a story and not sit there and wonder, what's this I'm reading? And there's the legalese I'm taking or I'm understanding, won't be there. It's going to be understandable for everyone, even though lawyers and cops and TV producers and everyone else are writing. We want everybody to understand and get a grasp of what we're talking about.
Yeah, that's true. And I think this is an excellent forum to do that. And one of the other positives about blogging is that you get immediate reader feedback
right.
Through comments. And so it works both ways, really. Readers also get to interact with professionals who are writing, and they can ask them questions. You know, if there is any legalese, and we're trying to filter that out, if there is any, then the reader has an opportunity to actually have access to that person, whereas if they're watching a television program, unless it's, you know, Larry King or something, it's rare to be able to actually ask someone a question. And this offers that opportunity, which I think is really progressive and really exciting for this particular group of women.
Pat, you have a defense attorney writing something, you have a prosecutor writing something, you have a police officer writing something, you have a profiler writing something. There's going to be different opinions and different thoughts and different theories as far as cases go. How do you intertwine that? How do you make that work with a blog like this?
Well, I think that's one of the that was just mentioned. There's immediate feedback. So as we check in on the blog every day, we see what the others have written. We get to intake that, and then we get to make our comments right away. And we can. I've seen it done where it works really nicely, because the readers of the blog also love the fact that they're not just interacting with the one person who wrote that post, but all the people on the blog are getting involved, and so it becomes a bit kind of a volley of all kinds of ideas back and forth, and they find it very exciting to be in the midst of a whole bunch of professionals and that they're able to take part in it. I think that's what's really fun. And it's very true that on a blog you're more likely to respond, because I know, you know, if I do television shows, I get a ton of emails, and quite frankly, a lot of times I don't answer them because I don't have time.
Right.
But I this is one of my projects every day, is to take a look at the blog. I'm more likely to be able to respond there, and somebody can get to me more easily through the blog. And so I think that's why this is going to be so wonderful for people to actually be able to talk with all the women that are out there that have all these skills and all these ideas to offer.
Well, I see how they work with Scared Monkeys, the blog that my show is associated with, and I'm sure that you guys will have the same success. Robin, when you know, I want to talk to you a little bit about being the national spokesperson for the National Amber Stick and the Internet. You do a lot of work with Internet safety and, you know, protecting children, and, of course, we all know the dark side of the Internet. How do you address that, Robin Sachs, prosecutor from Los Angeles, with your blog to make it a site that, you know, not anyone, but most people will like to come to be informed and maybe even entertained?
One thing that I like to teach parents, and I do a lot of time, I spend a lot of time lecturing to parents and then in turn as well to law enforcement, who also reach out to the community. And my premise is that knowledge is power, and the Internet is an amazing source of knowledge and thus is a very, very powerful tool. And simply because it's a tool that can lead to danger doesn't make it a tool that will always lead to danger. So I think that, you know, the Internet is here to stay. The Internet is a wonderful resource and provides an amazing amount of resources for writers, kids, every profession you can imagine. I mean, everybody, you know, the first step nowadays is to Google everything. And so I think the idea is to, you know, to know what's out there and to stay current with what's out there, one, by reading blogs such as ours, but also to learn the lingo and learn the language. I mean, a lot of people say blog and parents and non, you know, real savvy computer users don't even really know what a blog is and simply just hear the word blog and think that is some sort of negative type of thing. And in fact, if you look at our blog and many other blogs out there, this is an opportunity for people to learn, to speak their mind, to express opinions, to do things that they may not otherwise be able to do, and connect people from all parts of the country together. So I think that in terms of educating families, my number one goal is to not scare people. Well, actually, my first goal is to scare them in terms of scaring them enough to be able to get tech savvy instead of tech freaked out, and explore what's out there and get onto the sites that kids are on.
Vanessa Leggett, you were jailed for
librarian. I was actually asked by a librarian, how do you get your kids to read all these good books?
Yeah.
I thought it was kind of a funny question because I was homeschooling and I would take my children to the library every week. And there's a lot of junk in our libraries today. They don't just select wonderful books to put on the shelves. There's just garbage out there in the libraries. And if you let your children just run into the library and grab anything and don't oversee it and don't encourage them to pick good things and don't I basically let my kids pick things, but then I went over what books they were, and then I helped them select better books. And they had some freedom, but I watched over it. And my kids then became very avid readers of very good literature. And the same thing is true for the Internet.
Yep.
Your children can go on the Internet. Any of the students, it's a wonderful tool for them, but you do have to guide them to the great places. And once they realize that there's great stuff out there, you're less interested in the junk because you develop a taste for something good.
Yeah, absolutely. Vanessa, the power of the press, I don't know if you like that term or not, but you spent time in jail.
It doesn't exist.
Yeah, you spent time in jail for protecting a source on a murder case. And from the perspective of a police officer or a district attorney, that if an author knows someone who knows what happened, we're going to do what we can to try and get that information from you. That's our job. But it's a little different when you're writing about it. The power of the press, Vanessa, and the internet, I know the newspapers and even television and radio are very fearful of the internet because a lot of times the internet gets it right and they don't.
Yeah, that's true. There's a lot of a freedom and latitude that you have writing on the internet that you don't have in various other media. The way I see it, there are differing viewpoints, and prosecutors and defense attorneys and others do try to find out information from, you know, people who write books, newspapers, whatever. I really don't know how that's developing online as far as, I know there's been a couple of cases at least where government has gone after things on the internet. I don't really know how all that's going to shape up, but I don't know. I guess it'll remain to be seen. I hope that we don't encounter that on this website. I can tell you that.
Well,
we won't.
I don't think you will.
I hope not.
No.
And I actually share the same view that if somebody knows something about a case that is material and it can't be obtained from another source that is non-media, and it's specific that, you know, if there's a crime that's been committed, I'm mostly in favor of having to relinquish that information if all of those circumstances are met. And I'm not going to go into the details of my case.
Sure.
In my case, the government was wanting every single thing that I had in my research archives, and they weren't even going to let me keep copies of my work. And they weren't specific in their requests, and they couldn't show that any of it was material. In fact, they actually told the federal judge that they could not indict a man on a federal capital murder charge without my information. And yet, I was released from jail without ever giving up my information, and they indicted him. So, you know,
yeah.
Whatever.
I understand, but listen, ladies, our time is almost up. Vanessa Leggett, Robin Sachs, Pat Brown, and many more will be contributing to Women in Crime, Inc. Of course, there's a link to it on our webpage, or go to www.womenincrimeinc.blogspot.com. Thank you, ladies.
Thanks
for having
us.
Okay, take care. We'll do this again soon.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, bye-bye.
Great. Bye-bye.
We're going to take a break, and we're going to be back with Lisa. She's a scared monkey that attended the recent St. Louis travel show and was there to educate the public about that one happy island called Aruba. My name's Dana Pretzer. This is Scared Monkeys Radio. We'll be right back.
It's the Dana Pretzer Show on Scared Monkeys Radio. And now back to the show.
Okay, we're back. We've covered this story many, many times from many, many locales, or about many, many locales. It's the group of dedicated guys and gals that attend travel shows. The last show, I think we've done one about New York and one that was in Boston. And this particular travel show last weekend was in St. Louis. And these particular group of people go to these travel shows to voice their opinion, and they have a constitutional right to do that about the island of Aruba and how the island of Aruba may not be a safe place to go to, or educate the people about Natalie Holloway and how justice has not been, and we all hope that it will be served someday for Natalie. And on the phone with me now is one of the Scared Monkeys, Lisa, who attended the show in St. Louis. Welcome, ma'am.
Hi, Dina. Hi, Monkeys. It's a pleasure to be here.
You went to St. Louis. The shows are unique. You guys are not necessarily welcomed by open arms from the Aruba travel booth or people, but you're there with a purpose, and I want you to spend some time and tell us about why you were there and what it was like.
Well, it's true that Aruba did not like us being there. You know, so many of the people that attended the St. Louis show came there because Sonny and I had asked them to. They were friends of ours. I think one of the most exciting things that happened for me is that after the show, those people that attended for Sonny and I just walked away telling me, Lisa, it was such a pleasure, and I got so much out of it. And they went there supporting Sonny and I, and they came out supporting Natalie and our cause, and just very proud of what they did. So that was very moving for me. We had called the police, God bless our men in blue, ahead of time, and I had talked to Captain Pat and explained the situation, explained that we had had problems with Aruba in prior shows, and he said to me, Lisa, if I could stand there next to you, I would.
Mm-hmm.
You have our support. He called and set it up with the convention center. They were anticipating problems, and even the port security guards that kept getting called on us were so nice and felt so bad about having to push us out farther and farther away. And the farther away we went from the convention front doors, the more often they came around to give us rides for if we needed to take a powder break. So, you know, even the convention people supported us there. They were doing the jobs they had to. But it was just a heartwarming experience for me.
You know, the message that is sent on, passed on, we do it on this program. Of course, all the folks on Scared Monkeys do it. You guys do it by going to these travel shows. Is not just the fact, we're not saying that Aruba is this place that if you go, you'll die as soon as you get off the airplane. That's not the point here. The point is that there was a young girl almost 3 years ago now that disappeared on that island, that whose family has not received justice. That there's a question as far as the capability and even the corruptibility of the government there. And, you know, no justice for Natalie, no tourism for Aruba. I'm probably screwing that up. But
that was exactly what our message was.
Yeah.
And Fox News came out and did a piece on us. And when they put it on TV, they said our message was simple. No justice for Natalie, no tourists for Aruba. And I think that many know that I had some of my scouts come out. And it was a great experience for them. And I tried to explain it to them by relating it to the Pledge of Allegiance. And we talked about being indivisible, standing together for liberty and justice. And that if somebody took away our liberties, then they deserve justice, and that's what they were standing up for. So, no, I think that you hit that on the head exactly. That was our message. We want justice, and until we get justice, we're not going to send anyone there to support Aruba.
You know, I've interviewed Beth Holloway and Dave and everybody, Jugged, done dozens of interviews on this, and justice is served in many different forms. The biggest part of justice that I would like to see right now is to have Natalie be able to come home. The court system in itself is a failure in on that island, and we don't know if that will ever happen. But when will the message be finally gotten, and that's not a proper word, and I apologize for that, but when will they get it in Aruba, Lisa, or do you think they'll ever get it?
I think that they already have gotten it, and it doesn't matter. That's just my opinion. And my opinion now is that in order for them to take Yaron to court and prosecute him, they would have to expose the cover-up that was there by the police and the officials from day one. So I don't know if Beth or Dave or Jug or any of their family members or even us will ever see that day. My hope lies in Beth and the courts.
And hopefully Natalie will be able to go home, and you know, she's in a better place now, and those responsible for taking her life have a special place waiting for them. We won't get into that right now, but I want to thank you and all the people that attended this travel show for passing the message on, because keeping the story alive and passing the message on, however we do it, and I know you guys work very hard at it, is so important. And just a couple of final thoughts from you before I let you go.
Well, I want to thank everyone for giving me this opportunity, because it truly was a pleasure. I would do it again in a minute. And I also want to thank those people that are behind the scenes that, you know, within 3 days of Sonny and I saying that we're going to do this, we started getting boxes of banners and flyers and tote bags and sweatshirts. And so the behind the scenes people, Justice for Natalie, Cool Cat, I mean, it's just phenomenal what these people do and the money that they spend and the time that they put into it. My understanding was some had sick family members, some had deaths in the family, and yet they stepped up to the plate to make this happen for us. And so they deserve a big thank you also.
Absolutely, and the dedication is admirable. Now, you see, you were nervous before you came on the show, but you know what, gal? You kicked ass. You did a good job.
Thank you so much.
All right. Talk to you later.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. All right. That's another show. Scared Monkeys Radio, we're here for you 24/7 at www.scaredmonkeysradio.com. You can listen to podcasts of this program, other programs, my daily commentary, and, of course, don't forget the blog, scaredmonkeys.com. Thank you to all my guests this evening, and we'll see you again real soon here on Scared Monkeys Radio.
Been listening to the Dana Pretzer Show on Scared Monkeys Radio. We invite you to discuss tonight's program with other listeners by joining us at scaredmonkeysradio.com, where you'll find program archives, links to tonight's guests' websites, and further information regarding tonight's topics. Scared Monkeys Radio is a production of scaredmonkeys.com. Thanks for listening.